Don't overthink programming. You know, the simpler the better a lot of times. Everybody wants to ask about the perfect program. There is no perfect program. There's really only an optimal program for your time, for your space, for your equipment, for your athletes, right? There's an optimal program, not a perfect program.
Hello, and welcome to the Gestalt Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler White. In this interview, we get a chance to talk with Zach Dakent. He's the Senior Assistant Strength and Conditioning Coordinator for Texas Christian University. Zach will be one of our presenters this year at the World Pitching Congress. We look forward to hearing from him. He's also recently come out with a book called Movement Over Maxes. But for now, let's hear it from our guest, Zach Dakent. We are back with another interview in the performance series for the World Pitching Congress coming up. Today we have Zach Dakent. He's the Senior Assistant Strength and Conditioning Coordinator at TCU. Zach, real quick before we get rolling, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You got close enough. It's Dakent.
Dakent.
Old German name, but trust me, that's not the worst I've heard.
You know what's funny? I've heard it pronounced four different ways.
At least, I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Dakent. I'm going to write that down and remember that because I'll be having to say that later on. Yeah. How you been?
Good.
Yeah.
It's going good. Start of the semester's here, so we're very busy to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, we chat a little bit before recording started just to, you know, assessments and getting all the players in and get going before the school starts and bouncing it around each department and making sure everybody knows what they're doing for the upcoming season. And when do you get a chance to breathe?
Well, when I was in college, honestly, at this point, we've got kids that stay here year round now, you know, train through the summer. So, there's not really any windows of time when we're off. It's year round. Honestly, one of the least busy times I have is during 2-a-days during football camp and kind of the first 2 weeks here during school, because baseball is just cranking up, but practice hasn't started yet, which is nice. So I don't have afternoons completely full with practice. And my pro guys, you know, I've got probably anywhere between 25 and 40 pro guys that'll train here in the off season, starting, you know, basically mid September, late September, early October. And so there's kind of a window before these pro guys roll in, before we start fall practice, that is actually the least busy time that I have, even though it's still swamped with school starting up. So right now is probably the best time for the next 9 months.
And then it's full throttle the rest of the way.
Yeah. It's I'm getting married in December. I've got, you know, I'm speaking out at your guys's, you know, the World Pitching Congress in January. I've got three other speaking events between December and January there. You know, I got to take a honeymoon at some point in there. So yeah, there's not going to be much time to breathe.
So you do have a date for your wedding? Because I think initially when we were trying to work you in for our weekend, it might have been an issue.
Yeah, we found one. It's December 14th. So if everybody listening wants to shower us with gifts.
I was about to say, get your registry up there.
Yeah, we'll post that on your website.
There it is. We'll add that to the social media feed. So let's get a little bit of a geographic breakdown. I know, you know, some people are familiar with some of your work. You got your book out, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And, you know, people know a lot about TCU and their rich baseball history. Where are you from?
Yeah, I grew up in Western Kansas, small town. Town had about 300 people. I graduated with 16 others in my class. So when we say small, very small, to give you a reference, the closest Walmart is around 70 miles away. So, yeah, farming community. So I grew up as a farm kid, and then played football. I played football in college, went to Missouri State, and actually had some shoulder injuries that didn't allow me to play any baseball. Mm. So I was a tailback in college, and that's kind of where everything started.
What were your shoulder injuries?
Basically, I had four shoulder surgeries, labrum repairs, capsule repairs, whatever you want to call them. I think back in the day they were, I think they were Bankart, if I'm not mistaken. But I had two that were, they don't even do the surgery anymore, thermocapsular shrinkage. I had two of those done, or it might have been one of those done on one and another experimental on the other, and I'll be honest, they didn't work out real well. And so, I mean, I still have problems with my shoulders really bad, and honestly, my body's in bad shape because of it. So, it, yeah, I don't know how much football I'll have my kids play when they grow up.
Oh, man. Well, that could be for a lot of different reasons with all the latest research coming out.
It could. So I can't blame it all on that. But, yeah, but honestly, the shoulder surgeries led me kind of down the road where I am today, you know, with kind of a specialization in baseball. And that's really what started it was were those injuries.
What age did you have these injuries or your surgeries?
I had them in, first one was a junior in high school. I stiff armed a guy, shoulder popped out. I mean, basically shoulders just, I'm lax. They would pop out. I was a pitcher coming up. I had a lot of external rotation. I could throw hard, but obviously, was a problem on the football field for stability. So I'd get hit, I'd stiff arm a guy and they'd pop out. So first surgery was junior year. Second was, freshman year in college, third and fourth were both junior year in college, about 4 weeks apart.
So you had congenital laxity growing up, your whole life, double jointed, basically could move like Gumby.
Well, I don't know if I'm that far to that edge, but it had to be something like that because, honestly, I mean, both shoulders, same problem. It's got to be genetic. You know, you think on one side, because I played football as a quarterback growing up. You know, I was a pitcher. I played every position on the baseball field. Small town, I played every sport, right? You played five sports year round. So with throwing so much and you expect it on the right side, but the left side, you really don't. But so I had problems on both. So it kind of tells you that there's probably some genetic laxity in there somewhere.
It's kind of fascinating. It paints the picture of how training one sport to the other can be similar and vastly different all in the same aspect, depending on the individual.
Yeah, exactly. So it really, it makes me think back to, because I trained myself in high school. This is another interesting story, which we can get into. We didn't have a weight room, like I said, small town. So with the money I made on the farm in the summers, I bought my own rack as a freshman, bought, you know, a 300-pound weight set. I built weights using wood. I'd build different pieces of equipment that I needed just in a garage, or I would take 100-pound plates off a tractor. You know, the front end of the tractor has a counterbalance. They've got weights out front. So I'd take old weights like that, 100 pounds, and that would be my weights down in my basement. So I trained myself. I look back, you know, maybe I was doing some things wrong here and there, and maybe that's what caused problems. But it's interesting, and I'll be honest, it'll affect me for the rest of my life. So
you found ways to get it done. I was gonna jokingly say throwing hay bales and picking up cows, throwing them over your shoulder, but I mean, you weren't that, far off.
That too. I mean, loading hay, throwing hay, doing everything out on the farm. I mean, you build a different kind of strength. I'll be honest with that.
That's pretty good. No, and that's, it's funny to talk about that, but that might be the level of strength that most of these athletes need rather than doing a bunch of, you know, single leg or not single leg, but like quad extensions or something stupid like that, just repetitively. Right. It's like, hey, yeah, you gotta.
They're honestly, and people, I don't, you know, maybe people that grew up in the city or they don't understand this, but there is a different level of strength that you build being growing up on a farm. Now, I was a little bit different. I grew up in town, right? Town had 300 people and worked out on the farm, you know, as I grew up later on. So junior high school, worked out on the farm. But I had friends that grew up on the farm and they were working from the age of, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And when we'd get to, you know, junior high and early high school, these kids were ridiculous strong in the weight room at everything they did. And I was always jealous because I was like, how is this kid so strong? He, you know, squats a house. He bench presses 100 pounds more than any other kid in our class. Well, they'd been working out for, you know, 10 years up to that point. So there is a different level of strength when you grow up doing that kind of manual labor that you get into.
Yeah, it's not you have to will yourself to hit those three sets. It's you have to move this stuff because this is your job today. So
Right.
you got to get
Yeah.
it done.
Exactly.
That's amazing. So who or what would you say are your educational or professional influencers? Like, what do you look to learn, or who really made an impact on where you are
Sure.
today?
Honestly, starting out, like I said, my own weight set, built my own, little training facility in my basement. Starting out, it was Louis Simmons and Westside. That was the only information out there. And that, good or bad, they provided tons of training information, and that's what really started my desire, I guess, to get into this field. So that was my biggest influence early on. And then I, kind of realized maybe that's not the best way to train athletes as I got into college and internships and GA positions and whatnot. Since then, one of the biggest influence I would say has been Stuart McGill. Coming out of that powerlifting background a little bit, I had back problems. Back squatted and thought that strength was everything, and the stronger I am, the better I am as an athlete. And so it was just stronger, 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 stronger. So I started having back problems early on after I finished football. And Stuart McGill was kind of an eye-opening read, and I really just grabbed onto all the concepts that he preached, and ran with it, and that's what started to mold me as a strength coach, to be honest, with a lot of the philosophy that I believe in, was his look on stability and the spine needing to be stable, and he talks about the great cook. Stability, mobility, continuum is just like, Gray talks about. Obviously, Gray created it, I believe, but Stuart talks about it as well, and how the hips need mobility, the thoracic spine needs mobility. But that, at a young age as a GA was something that was eye-opening for me, and I started kind of going down that rabbit hole. And he was probably the biggest influence in a lot of my programming early on.
Yeah, no, he Stu McGill's, he's kind of one of the pioneers in low back stability and understanding how to train around certain conditions, whether it's pathological or psychological. My partner Brett Winchester, both in our kind of rehab consulting company and with World Pigeon Congress, he's presented alongside of Stu McGill, I think a handful of times. So I know they know each
Wow.
other decently well. So along the lines of the West Side Barbell, did you see the Netflix special yet?
No, I haven't. I've been wanting to watch it, and I honestly haven't made time. But yes, that's on my list.
It is that and a couple others also on my list, but unfortunately, I do not have the leverage when it comes to picking shows amongst my wife and I. So.
I was gonna say the exact. I've tried to bring that up, and it was shot down quickly.
Yes, yeah, I have no weight when it comes to
Yeah, no, I've heard it's good. I need to catch it.
So you said kind of along the lines of your early foundations of knowledge, Stu McGill, who'd you say more recently?
Let's see. More recently, I guess. I mean, I've always been a huge Verkhoshansky Bondarchuk fan. Bondarchuk actually would kind of be what we look towards as far as programming for advanced athletes or the guys that have made it up through the levels of our program. Here I've got different levels within our program. We've got our foundation program, which is our developmental athletes. We've got kind of an our intermediate program, which is after they graduate out of that foundation, they go into our intermediate program, and then I've got an advanced program where it's built around Bondarchuk, Anatoly Bondarchuk's principles. He's probably the greatest Olympic coach in history. Was a world record setter himself in the throws, and then trained, I believe, something like 12 more world record holders, gold medalists. I mean, the list is extensive, and I don't know it all, but might be the greatest Olympic coach in the history of Olympic sport. But we adhere to a lot of his principles as far as trying to be specific to what the guys the movement patterns and the systems that they need to develop based upon their skill. So that might be a more recent one of the more recent guys I look to. But honestly, there's so much information out there now. Sometimes I get lost in trying to do too much and trying to learn too much. So sometimes I have to try to cut out social media and try to focus as much as I can, because I get to doing too much stuff and then I'm splitting time everywhere and I feel like I've learned nothing.
It's hard, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's me and one of our assistants were just talking about that, the imposter syndrome, where you honestly, social media makes you feel inadequate about everything you do, right? Mm. Even though you know, the imposter syndrome is you feel inadequate even though you've proven and had success at what you've done, you still feel inadequate because you don't know what somebody else knows, or you feel like there's more to learn in this area. And so it's social media, just honestly, there's so much out there, and you read something on this topic and the first thing I think of is, man, I don't know as much as I should about this, and then I start studying it, and then the next day you see something else, and you're everywhere.
It's such a necessary evil, because the other side of the coin is what is what you're reading actually factual? Does it make sense, or is someone just trying to stay relevant by putting some BS out there to?
That's exactly where you're like, this is not proven. I know this is just a guy's opinion, but nobody knows that. They're just throwing out honestly big words a lot of times, and the general public doesn't catch on to it, and so everybody thinks it's right, it's accurate, and you're like, that's not how this happens at all.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, so I mean, right now, currently, you know, I'm going back and I'm rereading some of Super Training. Super Training is my favorite book. I've read it, I don't know how many times, but every time I read it, I learn something more. So that's my current project right now. I'm looking at a lot of Cal Dietz's spring ankle and some isometric stuff down on the lower shank for speed development for our position guys. Another good resource out there that I'll throw in there is the Strength Coach Network, strengthcoachnetwork.com. They put out a ton of great material for strength coaches, you know, performance enhancement. They've got webinars every month. They've got a great forum. So I think they do a really, really good job as far as the educational aspect.
Who's the author of Super Training? Do you know?
Yeah, Mel Siff and Yuri Verkhoshansky. So Mel Siff was kind of the creator of it, and then Yuri was a lot of Yuri's material on the backside.
Gotcha. Cool.
But yeah, it's if your listeners don't know about Super Training, it's about 900 pages of dense Eastern Bloc translation. So you sit plan for some time when you start that one.
So it's not your casual toilet read?
No. It's far from it. I mean, honestly, I think I've probably read it somewhere between 5 and 7 times. And there's days where I have to read one page of it 6 times. It's that dense.
I have a motor learning book that's like 200 pages, and it took me all of 6 months to get through it. It's just like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's frustrating, to be honest. It's very frustrating, but there is a ton of information in it.
Oh, man. And that stuff you're not going to find on Twitter.
Right.
So I saw in your bio you have some work experience both in Division I and professional baseball, working with the Angels, correct?
Yeah, a couple years before I got – after my GA position, I was with the Angels for 2 years.
Tell me what you've noticed the big difference between the two, or working in the two are.
Well, man, I'll tell you, at that time, the thought process in professional baseball was they're just going to let the cream rise to the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got 200 and some guys in the organization, and whoever's good will make it eventually. They'll rise. It was disappointing because there's so many opportunities and avenues to develop young men at that level that they weren't taking advantage of. And it wasn't just them. It was across the board, you know. We'd have 16-year-old Dominican kids, you know, sign million-dollar contracts and come in. And at that time, lifting was not, you know, player development was – there wasn't any player development, you know. The weight rooms in professional baseball facilities were 15 machines, hammer strength machines, or 15 power lift machines. right? An ab crunch machine was one of them that I saw during my time. You know, a tricep extension, a preacher curl. Those were the machines that we were training these kids on. You got one set of 12 to 15 reps on each machine. That's your workout. And I'm like, this kid is a 16-year-old. Honestly, he was. They were freaks of nature. I'm sorry, freaks of nature, to make it to this point with no previous training. But then when they got there, we didn't do anything to development or to develop them, and they eventually just got weeded out of the system. And I was like, not only are we not developing these kids on an athletics basis, but from a personal and a human being standpoint, we're not doing anything to help these guys either. And that's honestly why I wanted to get back into college baseball, was because I want to develop kids not only on the athletic side, but I want to develop better guys for society.
Mm-hmm.
I want to turn boys into men is what I wanted, right? I'm not worried about your career as a professional baseball player, because there's only going to be a handful of off each team that make that. So we want to make you better husbands, better fathers, better people in our society. So that's really what transitioned me back to college. And I've been fortunate here at TCU. That's 100% the philosophy that our head coach, Coach Loschnagel, has.
That's good. Yeah. It's always interesting. You know, I got friends from both sides of the equation, and it's interesting to hear how each person thinks and talks about the situation at hand, because you're right. You're throwing millions of dollars at some of these athletes, and they're saying, you know, you don't want to be the one that breaks them. You don't want to be the one that changes who they were. But on the other side, you also know there are a ton of inefficiencies in some of these athletes that you can change, that you can be a part of helping make better. But if they don't have a system built for that, then you're essentially just, like you said, waiting for the cream to rise to the top, in a sense that, well, it's more of a, you know, who can survive, who can outlast, who can not break down.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I mean, here's an example. We had one squat rack in the entire facility, one squat rack. And I was the only human being that was probably allowed on the squat rack. I was the only one that used it, because we didn't teach guys. The squat wasn't even part of our program. It was, you got one set of 12 to 15 on the leg press over in the corner. And that was the program. And it was extremely frustrating in that, I'll be honest, my first day I got there, and I remember calling my, my mentor, and he was my college strength coach as an athlete. That's where I went back to GA at Missouri State.
Mm-hmm.
I remember calling my mentor and saying, man, I made a huge mistake here. But kind of found ways to get around some of that, and actually started training the guys, because some of the kids realized, like, this is not what's going to help me get to the top. So they would come to me and say, hey, can you help me? And can you help me? Can you write a program for me that you would recommend, and that, you know, is going to actually provide some development for me? So we got around it a little bit, and it turned into a great situation for me and a great learning experience.
Mind I ask, who was your mentor?
Yeah, his name was Rick Perry. So he was the strength coach at Missouri State, went to Notre Dame following that, and then just was with the Chicago Bears as strength coach there. And now he is with, I believe, just got hired at the University of Northwestern.
Cool. You still keep in touch with him?
Oh yeah, yeah. Everything that I've done or I've been able to achieve is because of him. So I owe it all.
I don't think many people in whatever industry they're coming up in understand how important it is to have somebody that can kind of help guide your path a little bit. Because there's, like we talked about, there's so much information out there, whether good or bad. You need someone that has had that experience, that understands what needs to be done, or just has a little bit more background that can help kind of mold your foundation going forward. And without that mentor, that, you know, someone that can basically be the person to help you through it, you're kind of scrambling at 150 different options of where to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially today with the vast amount of information out there, right? You know, back when I started, there wasn't social media. So that's how I got turned on to some of the Eastern Bloc research. And because of him, you know, everything he had studied and come from was the Soviet methods and all the Eastern Bloc stuff. So that's how I got turned on to all that.
So we talked a little bit about major league, or not major league baseball per se, but just professional baseball and collegiate baseball and kind of what's going on previously. Where do you think the industry is going?
Well, I think it's going in a good direction right now. I really like the fact that technology, what technology has done on one side of things, right? It's giving us objective feedback versus just, you know, applying thoughts and opinions on everything. But I love how Eugene puts it out there at 108, right? Eugene says the coaches that didn't have technology, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, they weren't necessarily wrong. This is just proving what they were saying and why they were saying it, right? It's just, it's proving that they were right, but now we can actually look at it objectively. So I do like the fact that it's, that the technology has kind of taken us in a good direction where it's being accepted, I should say. You know, on the strength and conditioning, the performance side, I think it's made leaps and bounds from when I was in it. I got a count, but at last count, it was somewhere around 12 or 13 interns at the professional baseball level as strength coaches now. And, you know, I talk to a lot of them and they tell me what's going on. They send me stuff that they're doing, and I'm actually very, very, very impressed. So it's definitely headed in the right direction, from what I can tell.
I mean, just since the last decade, what you were describing, what was going on at a professional level is kind of, you shake your head at.
Right. I mean, that was, I think, 12, 13 years ago, 2006, 2007, I believe, was when I was with Anaheim. So, yeah, 12 to 13 years ago was when it was like, scratch your head, what are we doing? And, you know, now I've got interns that are designing programs on force plates and they're doing some impressive stuff that even I'm like, dude, you guys are way ahead of what I'm doing. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Isn't that crazy to watch? Like, yeah. Oh man. Well, I was about to bring up another story earlier. I'll just do it now. I was at Sabre seminar in Boston here a couple weeks ago, and I was just sitting next to a guy who had a TCU shirt on. And I go, hey, do you know Zach? He goes, oh yeah, we're just texting him earlier. You guys work hand in hand. It was Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin Knight, our video guy.
Yeah, which was kind of ironic. I was like, oh yeah, he's speaking at our thing here in January. But how much information, like, some of these, you know, college students know and like they're integrating into baseball. I'm like, man, there was so much being said there that I didn't have the slightest clue what it meant. I was like, what are you guys doing? It's fascinating, yeah. But it's like, holy cow.
Yeah. It's incredible, honestly, the amount that you can pick up from some of these young guys. And so that's what, you know, with our internship program, that's what we're trying to do is I'm trying to give them a lot more on their plate so they can help take some of it off me. But honestly, the kids know so much that they can teach me a lot, teach me stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Eugene's name, Eugene Blicker at 108 Performance. His name's been brought up already a couple times in a few of the interviews we've done or the recordings we've done. I have not done his interview yet, so I'm a little nervous and excited at the same time because I never know what he's going to bring.
You never know. And sometimes he gets out there so far, you're like, all right, I don't even know what to say to that.
And it is straight nitrous fueled, just going. Yeah. He is unbelievable.
He's great.
So what are some of the day-to-day challenges you face at TCU, just as the strength coordinator and all that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, honestly, is time. It's trying to find time to fit everything in because you start looking at, and this is where it becomes tough, is the programming aspect. I'll be honest. I'll be the first one to admit there's too many times I overthink programming. And I tell interns and coaches this all the time. Don't overthink programming, you know. The simpler, the better a lot of times. Everybody wants to ask about the perfect program. There is no perfect program. There's really only an optimal program for your time, for your space, for your equipment, for your athletes, right? There's an optimal program, not a perfect program. But I'm the first one to admit that I get carried away sometimes overthinking the heck out of a program. Sometimes I get, you know, tied down with trying to individualize too much a little bit. We're limited, you know, not being a private facility, being a college here, We've got 450 some other athletes that have to train out of this facility, built around class schedules, built around practices, you know, everything that goes into sharing that. We got limited time. So I can only individualize sometimes so much and have quality control, if you know what I mean. Because once you go too far to the side of everything being individualized, I feel like you lose quality control, and I can't watch 45 athletes in a 60-minute time span do, you know, 9 different exercises or speed work and jumps, throws, and all this, and still maintain quality of movement execution. So a lot of times I would say the biggest problem I put on myself is trying to find that optimal mix of the team aspect and the individualization for programming.
It makes it tough. I mean, I think we do the same thing in the rehab setting sometimes, where we try to overthink it. And really, you need to get the body moving well, you need to get it strong and stable, and you got to make sure it can do whatever it's supposed to do in those two, both mobility and stability kind of backgrounds. Going back to what we talked about, we see all these eyewash drills and exercises and stuff on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, whatever. And it's like, why are we doing this? Why are we trying to create some of the, you know, just outlandish things to appear right, different? When we don't need, like you said, simplicity is the key. Like, yeah, just get really good at that, and you're going to have fantastic results.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I preach this all the time to our interns, and I'm the internship coordinator here, so I give lectures on programming and how to build, you know, annual plans and all this stuff. And then I turn right around and go back into it, and I'm like, I spend hours looking at an empty spreadsheet saying, man, what am I going to do here? What am I going to do there? What? And I overthink it, you know, every time I write a program, I go to overthinking it when I should just follow my own advice.
Yeah. And you know, I guess I do understand in a sense that each individual is different, right? We have different levels of congenital laxity or flexibility, different levels of strength, different levels of development, different levels of, you know, height, weight, all this. But even with the many variables, still you can break it down to very simple systems or ideas, right, and then just kind of build from there.
Yeah, I mean, we try to, honestly, what I try to do is, like I said, I've got our, you know, our novice, our intermediate, and our advanced programs. And then within that, for the most part, it's a base program that's built around the same concepts for everybody. And then within that, we can kind of individualize into buckets based upon the person. So that's what we try to do. Yeah, there's times when I get to thinking too much, and you know, you write what you look back on, and you're like, what was I doing with this program?
Yeah. So if you were going to be doing a recruiting video or anything like that for TCU, what would you say makes you guys different or better, or a place that someone would want to spend the next 4 years learning and growing?
You know, honestly, I guess my first, the first thing I would say is one of my, I guess, our philosophy is that you're either coaching it or allowing it. So the first thing we want to be doing is we're always coaching it, right? We always want you to be, getting better. If you're not coaching the movements, coaching everything that you want out of an athlete in the weight room, you're just allowing poor habits to form, right? It doesn't matter whether it's in the weight room or, you know, in the classroom, time management, you have to be coaching it. You can't be allowing athletes to kind of do what they want, I guess I should say. Our program is built around turning boys into men, like I said earlier. That's the foundation of our program, right? It's accountability, it's responsibility, it's discipline, it's doing the small things right. That is a huge one, doing the small things right. This is what Coach Slosh said, you know, this past week. There are no little things. In the weight room, on the field, it doesn't matter. We talk about our deceleration work. Here's a good example, our deceleration work, and I know I'm running 1,000 directions here, but this is a specific example. I take our pitchers through a deceleration progression, right? So that we can learn to control our body into a stop, because that's honestly what they have to do off the mound. You have to control your body into a stop, grab a baseball and throw it to first base a lot of times. And that deceleration work here that we're doing in August, September, October, is what leads you to being able to stop with your feet under you in a super regional game in the bottom of the ninth inning when they've got a runner on third and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to get a run in. Because you see it so often, pitchers go to get off the mound and they reach down for a ball. What happens? Feet slip out from under them. Run scores, guy's safe, you know, a whole cascade of events could happen. But where you learn that is, you know, August, September, October, November. That's where you learn that stuff. And people, you know, the athletes think, well, yeah, it's no big deal if I don't get my deceleration work good today, or if I'm not stopping on the right edges, or I'm slipping out there, and no big deal right now. They don't see it in the grand scheme of things that this thing could snowball into a huge thing and cause you a lot of pain down the road. So that's one of the biggest keys, is there are no small things.
That's fascinating. I mean, it all boils back down to the be good at the simple, the foundation, the stability. Because, yeah. I mean, all that kind of runs hand in hand together.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I know I went off on a couple different tangents.
No, it's good. That's where the meat is, man. That's when you start, you know, going off on these tangents where your brain clicks and it's like, oh, yeah, that's what I meant to say. That's what the good stuff is.
Yeah, I mean, another thing to finish on that, too, is that one thing that we really pride ourselves on is saying that there's 40 coaches in the weight room. So when all of the kids are in the weight room, it's not just me. It's not just my pair of eyes, because I can only see one thing at a time, right? So that's where the team aspect has to come into play. And I talked about it a minute ago with the team aspect versus individualization. When you have too much individualization and guys doing, you know, 47 different things all at once, the team aspect gets lost. Well, we're playing a team game still, right? At this level, you know, in a private facility, it might not apply as much, but we're playing a team game, and I need those guys to learn, you know, that they can lead each other, that they can help each other, that they can depend on each other. So we use the concept of it's 40. There's 40 coaches in the weight room. There's 40 pair of eyes. They know the foundation program. My older guys do. So they know when a kid isn't sitting back on a squat. They know when he's doing, you know, he's not pausing on a reverse pull up, or he's you know, not using his hips to hinge. So they coach those aspects of the younger guys. We want those guys coaching at all times, to be honest. We want them to build a relationship with the younger players and to turn into leaders, because those younger players are the future of our program. So we've got to build those kids, you know, they've got to see somebody above them, be leaders, and then transition into that role themselves.
Yeah, that's good. So everybody's essentially a team leader.
Yeah, I mean, we have to have that. We have to build that continually throughout each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they just kind of blossom into the next year's leaders as they continue to teach and grow together.
Exactly.
That's a really good system.
We want 40 coaches.
Yeah, that's perfect. So here in St. Louis, a name that is well-recognized is Matt Carpenter. So he was a TCU alum. I know you guys have done a little bit of work together. His story, he kind of mentioned that he didn't really take care of himself the best he could at some phase of his college career, and then turned it around. Could you tell us a little bit about kind of what all would go into that, or kind of how that worked out?
Sure. So I actually came the beginning of Matt's junior year. His sophomore year, he had a UCL injury. So he was out for the entire year. At that time, he was weighing about 240-some pounds. I think he peaked at 247 is what I was told. So I came the beginning of his junior season. I started in February. So at that time, he had lost all the weight. He was down, first time I weighed him in, 181 pounds. He had went the exact opposite way, super skinny, honestly weak. They didn't have much of a lifting program here at the time. And he stayed back that first summer, his junior season, instead of going out. Honestly, a junior season is kind of a big time to go play summer ball. A lot of times, sophomore, junior year, he stayed back and trained. In that 8-week period, I think we had in the summer, he went from, I think, 181 pounds to somewhere in the 202 range. So put on about 20 some pounds, and honestly, completely changed everything that he was doing. His junior year, I think he hit, I I'm going to be wrong if I say it, but he might have hit like 3 home runs or something like that. Came out his senior year, and I think he hit somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 20 some bombs. Had an incredible senior season, was a huge leader. Just absolutely changed everything he did, nutrition-wise, partying-wise, weight room-wise, leadership, everything. Everything was completely different about the human being. So it's the best transition that I've seen in an athlete. I mean, those numbers might be wrong, and I'm not saying it's because of the strength program, but it's because of what he did as far as dedicating himself to being a better player. And part of that was the physical development, the nutritional side. I mean, to this day, he's probably the best athlete I have currently that on the nutrition side of things. You know, he'll get up, egg white omelet, handful of vegetables. His nutrition is absolutely locked in at all times.
That's like the perfect, he's like the perfect poster child for like, do the right stuff. Like, you see the result. And yeah, he's a freak athlete, and maybe not a freak athlete, but he's a great athlete. And if you just, you do the right things, you're going to get a positive result. And even if you don't turn out to be a professional athlete, you know, you've set a foundation for being able to stay healthy and everything else, just to have a good, fulfilled life. Like, people right. don't realize that if you run, you know, full throttle for your whole career, but not really taking care of yourself, you're going to have to pay the price as an older individual. And it's not fun to hurt every time you get up and move, or every time that, you know, you have to take care of yourself. It's just, it's not good. So like, setting that foundation now is just huge.
Yeah. Well, I'll even say this. He's the poster child for what you just described, right? Of changing his life. But the real key to the kids and the parents that are listening is he's not special athletically, right? He is a good athlete. He's a good athlete. I'm not going to take that away from him. But if you looked at athletic abilities outside of just the skill of baseball, he's nothing that's going to impress you. If we went out and ran a 60, if we did, you know, took strength numbers, vertical jump numbers, he's an average athlete at best. He built himself into what you see as a major league all-star, what you see on the field today. He built himself into that. That's what, honestly, the people out there should take away from, is dedicating yourself to that can take you a long, long ways, even though you might not be this, you know, unbelievable athletic talent. He built those skills, and you know, is the guy you see on TV today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so clutch. Kind of along those same lines. Do you travel with the team? Like, when yeah. they go, okay. Everywhere. So do you guys use like blue blocker glasses to help implement, or to help with sleep, or any type of like meditation apps to get them into a parasympathetic state for recovery?
So we do a little bit once in a while on the road. It's not all the time, but once in a while on the road, Brian Kane will travel with us. So he's our sports psychologist. And they'll do some different things of that nature. They do, I shouldn't say that. We do it more often than not, where they'll have a team meeting to finish the night, and they will go over some, we will do some meditation and some things like that. That usually comes through Kane and not me. But we don't get too deep into all of that stuff. And I'll give you an example. Whoop, you know, they have a great product, and they wanted to work with us. And I presented it to Coach Schlossnagel, and we talked about it a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, for us and those 45-some kids, we know they're college athletes. We have to get them up early to lift, because that's kind of our only time frame. You know, we have one weight room, like I said, for 400-plus athletes. Class schedules, we're at a small private school where class schedules are not ideal. So we know that these kids, we know they're not getting sleep a lot of times, right? We don't need somebody to prove it to us. We know that that's going to happen, and that's just part of the you know, the program isn't perfect. It just has to be optimal for us. So, you know, his thought was, for a pro athlete, excellent. Yes, to take that last, you know, 1% step. That's absolutely what they should be doing. But he's like, we can't spend that type of money on knowing that we know they're not going to get sleep. We know that they're going to drink. We know that they're going to party. That's what 18-year-old kids do. We know that. That's going to happen. So I don't need to know that that's going on, if you know what I mean. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't kind of went down that rabbit hole, to be honest. I can tell you some stories, to be honest, from other schools that use these things. I can tell you stories about the ways that kids get around some of the things that they use to track and monitor.
Yeah, I've heard a few.
Here, I'll give you one. I'll give you one just for fun, right? The night before a game, or a Friday night, it might have been after a game, Friday night game, on a weekend series, coaches looked at the, you know, whatever it was. They weren't using Whoop, it was something else, but monitors GPS, right? It's a GPS monitor, and they saw all these older players that don't live in the dorms in a dorm room. They're like, what the hell is going on? All these kids are over at whatever dorm. And come to find out, they had basically made a freshman put 27 armbands on, and this kid was just hanging out at his dorm room while, you know, the rest of the players were out doing their thing out in the town. So it looked like everybody was home and in bed, and there was no activity, you know, because the kid was at home sleeping while they were out doing their thing. So that's the type of stuff that's going on. I mean, you know, that's what's happening. We know they're college kids. They're going to do some of that. We're just trying to educate them as best as possible to make the right decisions and, you know, and hope that that's what they do. But in the end, our hands or our careers and jobs are in the hands of 18-year-olds. So that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, that's funny. Some of the stories I heard kind of on the pro level side of things aren't exactly PG. Can't really share it, but you get the idea.
I'm sure I imagine.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here for a couple questions.
Sure.
What's a common thought or perception in the industry that most people agree on that you think is completely false?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna back out of this answer because, or I shouldn't say back out, but honestly, I don't know that I have one anymore. As a young strength coach, you form a lot of these opinions where you're like, man, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. You see a program, kid brings a summer program home or something like that, and you're like, what is this guy doing? This is terrible. Context is everything. And really, I have no context of anybody else's program, of what anybody else is doing, other than that one, you know, one small piece a lot of times. And I now realize that there's a lot of ways to do things, right? There's a ton of ways to do things. The more experience I have, it opens the lens to everything really is a possibility. So without context, I can't judge. And I tell our interns, you really can't judge people's program by just seeing it, you know, a kid bring home a summer program or something you saw online. I don't like doing that anymore. Here's an example, aerobic activity, right? The aerobic system, completely wasted time. Absolutely useless for a baseball player. That was the common perception, right? 5-10 years ago, I was the same. I was in that boat. You can't do aerobic work. That's stupid. We're not trying to make kids slow. There's absolutely a reason for aerobic work now, and I realize that, right? There's absolutely a reason for developing the aerobic system to take you back into a parasympathetic state, and it creates a better foundation for you to recover from, and you can work, you know, have higher work capacity levels and all this stuff. So I'm not at one end of the or the other of the spectrum anymore. I'm in the middle because I understand that there's a lot of ways to do a lot of different things, and I don't know that there's I don't know if there's anything that I just say no, that's completely wrong. I think there's a lot of ways to do it.
I like that. Context matters. That's a really good answer.
I appreciate that. Yes, thank you.
So also, what part of player development do you feel like you're the weakest at?
Oh, that's a tough one. Honestly, if we take a look at it from the baseball side, the hitting stuff, I'm not clued in at all right now to the hitting aspect and you know, the motor skill development that happens there. Everything I study is really on the pitching side. I know rotation is rotation. Essentially, they're the same thing. They're the same process is happening. But that's one thing I really don't mess with when it comes to social media, especially, is studying the hitting aspect. I stay out of that completely. Those things get violent on social media.
Right? That's the safe place. Yeah,
and stay away. So I don't even know that I have that big of an interest in it sometimes. I mean, I work a lot on the pitching side with Coach Sarlos, and we talked about a little bit earlier the motion capture side and studying movement and how one thing affects another thing, and the kinematic sequence and everything on the pitching side, but the hitting side is not my forte at this time.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same boat. I can talk all day long on the pitching, but when we get into hitting, even though I was a hitter, like that was what I played in high school and college. Like I was the hitter. It didn't really matter the position. I was the hitter. My interest is definitely in the pitching. So I definitely feel the same. Let's talk about your book.
Sure.
So Movement Over Maxes. You and I, when I first met you was at, Dallas, ABCA this last January. Yeah. And, we talked about your book a little bit. Go over a little bit more about where your inspiration was, why you felt like, hey, this needs to get out to the world, kind of the whole process of writing a book.
Yeah, so it really started, 12 years ago, probably longer than that, to be honest, as a GA even. Just designing programs where you needed to teach the foundation of movement, right? Athletes would come in the door and the first thing coaches would do would test, right? You test a squat, test a bench. And I was always under the impression of, what are we doing testing this? This kid doesn't even know how to do this movement. So it came out of the necessity to teach kids how to move correctly first. A lot of these kids have never even had a barbell on their back before. What do we need to test these guys for? So it came out of the necessity to teach and train movement so that they had a foundation of them or under them to progress. I'll use the example of Matt Carpenter. It's a perfect story. Matt Carpenter has gone through every level of programming that I can take him through, right? I came his junior year. We put him in the foundation program because he had never had a truly structured lifting program before that. We put him in the foundation program as a developmental athlete. So he went through the exact same stuff that is in the book. That program that's in the book is what Matt Carpenter did as a junior in college. He went through the development program, advanced into their intermediate stuff, into the advanced stuff as an early pro, where we were doing a lot of, honestly, a lot of speed strength work, a lot of different tempo cadence stuff, eccentrics, isometrics, I mean, overload eccentrics. Some crazy, crazy stuff, right? He was in a way a guinea pig. But he advanced into that advanced program. And now he's gotten to the latter stages of his career where he's actually having to step back because he can't do that. He can't do that high intensity CNS driven dominant training. It's too much on his body. It takes too much of a toll. So he's actually, peaked in his training, and he's honestly on the way back down to something that's almost more foundation program like, and that it's just built around, maintaining movement, maintaining strength, mobility, stability, keeping all those factors involved, but we're not developing any one quality because that's not what's going to separate him anymore. So I guess I lost where I was going with all that. What was the question?
Basically just writing the book and the passion for it. And all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I know I got off on a tangent right there, but that's where it came from is teaching kids how to move correctly. And coaches asking me all the time, hey, send me a program. And I can't send you a program because it'd be like reading Chinese, for you, because you don't understand what we're trying to do. Like I said, context is everything, right? You have no idea what we're trying to achieve with this and that individual. I can't just send you a program for your junior high or high school kids. So that's why I decided I need to just put this out so people understand how to ingrain movement patterns at an early age with young athletes that have no idea what they're doing in a weight room or, honestly, in a formal training setting.
And honestly, you did a great job putting it together. I have patients that ask all the time, what do you recommend me to do strength wise? And I just say, get Zach's book. Like it's good. It's not overly dense like that Russian Eastern Bloc book that you're talking about, right? It's here's the fundamentals of what you need to do. Here's why you should do it, and here's how you can do it. And that's what they need.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That's entirely what the goal was. The goal was to make it for the high school coach that has no strength staff, the junior college coach who, again, has no strength staff as their own. They wear the hat for the entire program, for everything that the program needs, right? Small college coaches, that's what it was written for, is those guys that have to run their weight program, their running program, their they're their pitching coach. It was created for them, for parents. So that was the goal.
Yeah, I think goal met for sure. So other than your book, what other resources would you recommend others to get, whether it's something strength and conditioning or performance or just professional, you know, building culture, understanding how to build a EQ or whatever, leadership?
Sure. I mean, to me, the number one book, I talked about it earlier, that changed my entire thought process of how the body moves, how the spine works, was Stuart McGill's, you know, Back Performance and Fitness. That was the most influential book at the time for me. You know, Strength Coach Network, I talked about it a second ago. I think that's an excellent resource for strength coaches specifically. You know, it might be a little too much. It might be a little too dense for, you know, your common just skill coach or parent. That's probably not what I would recommend. But those two right now, I would tell everybody that's in the performance side to make sure they grab those. You know, other ones that are out there, I got to think of the name of, I love the book, and this is terrible, I can't think of the name of it. What's the Australian rugby team?
The All Blacks?
Yeah. What's the book they wrote? They wrote it on leadership. That's one of my favorite books outside of strength and conditioning, and I can't think of the dang name.
Legacy.
Thank you. There we go. I don't have it here. That's actually a book Coach Loschnagel gave us as a staff to read a couple years ago. I think that's a tremendous book, and that's honestly kind of that's how we operate the organization here. That's how we operate TCU baseball. The same principles that they talk about in Legacy. So there's no small things. You know, everybody's a leader. You know, sweep the sheds. There are no small jobs. That's an excellent resource on leadership and culture development.
And I'm not going to take any credit for bringing that up off the top of my head. I had it on my bookshelf right behind me, so I had to look it up real fast.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to type it in Google.
It's a really good book, though. And it like you said, it's not necessarily about rugby. It's about life. It's about being a good person and doing the right things and like putting that all together as a team and being a leader. And it is a fascinating book. It's really good.
Yes. Yeah, it's great.
So do you know what you're going to be presenting on in January? Do you have your presentation kind of figured out?
I'm not real sure yet. Yeah. To be in short, no, I don't. It's we'll see how the semester goes and kind of what leads me to where we go, what rabbit hole, I guess. I mean, I've got some options, but to be honest, I like presenting on something new every time I go and present somewhere. So usually it comes out of what's the previous semester's brought in, and we'll see.
I'm the same way.
What do you want to hear?
Well, I want you to bring whatever you feel your expertise is to the crowd that needs it.
Sure.
That's what we're going for. I mean, I think that's going to be the going topic, and there's going to be you and Brandon McDaniel with the Dodgers. And, I think that might be it on the strength and conditioning side. So you definitely have an open platform to speak on what you like.
Yeah.
Anything else that we haven't mentioned or talked about you'd like to get off your chest or you think needs to be mentioned?
I don't think so. I got a lot of stuff that we could talk for a long time on, but for the sake of everybody else.
Save it for January.
Yeah, there we go. That might be what it is.
Oh, man. All right. Well, everyone needs to get their tickets now. Come listen to Zach talk. I know it's going to be good, even though he hasn't quite nailed it down. You know, the group of speakers here is going to be outstanding. The ability to, in my opinion, just the ability to be in the same group with all of these presenters and to chat and to pick their brains and whatnot is where I feel most of the value is. Like when I go somewhere, I do like to hear presentations, but I look forward most to meeting these people and discussing different things and like really kind of getting down to the nitty gritty rather than them just talking off of a presentation that they had.
Yeah, it's absolutely the networking aspect. I think that's that people don't pick up on or that they don't utilize enough when you're at conferences like this. It's the networking side so that you can ask these questions, you know, 6 months down the road when you have one.
Yeah. Yep. Are you going to be in Nashville for the next year's ABCA or are you going to be busy?
I'm not sure. That's falling around that honeymoon time. So
Oh.
that's what we're trying to work with. Well, you know, here's the other thing too, is Lance wanted me to come out and speak at Pitchapalooza again this year, right? And that's actually the weekend of our wedding. So he's like, no, I'll bring you out Thursday. I'll fly you back Friday. You'll be at the wedding in time on Saturday. And so then I was like, I don't know if that's the risk I want to take in December, right? In the Midwest in
Oh
December.
man.
You
Yeah.
know,
It's a
that's all I
toss-up.
need. That's all we need is a winter storm hitting and then I miss my wedding.
Oh, that's not a good start.
No, that's a sign.
All right. Well, Zach, thanks for the time today. Thanks for chatting and letting us know a little bit more about you and what you're doing and some of your insights.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. I appreciate it.
All right. So I'll look forward to hanging out again and listening to you in January.
Sounds good.
All right. I'll see you.
Yeah, bye.
All right. And there you have it. So that was Zach Dakind. He will be presenting alongside of many of the top experts in the field in St. Louis, Missouri, here in January for the World Pitching Congress. That'll be January 17th to the 19th. Tickets are on sale. Go ahead and get them now. We do have a limited number of seats. Again, this is our first year doing this, so we're not going to be selling as many as possible. We're going to keep it limited and make it a nice, intimate group. This gives you the opportunity to learn from some of the best in the world and get to chat with them as well. Whether you're strength and conditioning, physical therapy, athletic training, chiropractic, you're into sports medicine in any shape or form, as well as pitching instructors or pitching coaches, this is going to be your event. Also, if you're looking for a good movement warm-up or a dynamic movement prep, you can download a free ebook on gestaltperformance.com or go to our Twitter page, and there you can get a link for our dynamic warm-up ebook. It's all about movements that are specifically designed for rotational athletes, and obviously we have baseball and pitching specifically in mind, so go check that out. It's a free download, really good resource, hearing a lot of great things about it. And it's free, which is awesome. Thanks.